Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
I got to go with Gord first this time because he bought us a drink in the commercial break.
Thank you, Gord.
You're welcome.
Gord. Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, Dave Pullen. It's hour number three of Overdrive, TSN 1050. Hazy B will be back next week. There was a, because it's the All-Star game tonight, Futures game, of course, kicks off All-Star week on Sunday nights now.
Yeah.
A young player by the name of Ke'Bryan Hayes. K-E apostrophe, Brian with a Y, like Brian Hayes. Ke'Bryan Hayes hit a home run in that game.
Nice.
Hey, are you saying there's games on Wednesday in baseball? There's no games on Wednesday, is there?
No, there's only
one game on Wednesday.
There's one game on Thursday.
Okay.
That's the Cubs hosting the Cardinals, and then everybody's back Friday.
Because there are only 2 days on the calendar when there are no games in Major League Baseball, the NHL, the NBA, or what I missed. NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL.
Yesterday and tomorrow. If you count tonight as a game.
Yeah. Yesterday and tomorrow are the only 2 days in the calendar where there are no...
Well, this is generally regarded as the worst sports week of the calendar year.
The quietest, yes.
Or the quiet... Well, and we call it the worst because we are content-driven people.
We've had lots to talk about.
But there's been tons to talk about.
That's the weird thing, right? There's so much to talk about. Now Machado might get traded, what, tonight?
Well, you see, it's weird because as of yesterday, the rumors were that the Dodgers had swooped in as the front runner to get Manny Machado out of Baltimore. Now Sports Illustrated, SI.com, is reporting as of the last hour or so that the Philadelphia Phillies could be the lead
dog. Now, if Machado goes, say he goes to the Phillies, does he play for the National League tonight?
If the trade happens in the next hour?
Nice. Yeah. That used to be important in the All-Star game.
That's not live what we're looking at, is it?
No, it isn't.
But it looked like pitch black.
Yeah, that was earlier.
3 o'clock in the afternoon in Washington. I guess they've had just unbelievable storms there. So
but Major League Baseball doesn't want any business done during the All-Star break at all.
They don't.
You know, this brewing is upsetting them in itself.
Somebody fired their manager during the All-Star break. And Bud Selig made a comment about it.
Well, see, it's funny. The Cardinals fired Mike Matheny on Saturday. So they had made the decision Friday and did it Saturday. So that was a day or two buffer. There was a player, do you remember a closer by the name of Jeff Shaw?
Yeah.
About 20 years ago, 25 years ago. The Reds traded him to the Dodgers about 2 days before the All-Star game. Now, it didn't matter because he didn't switch leagues.
No, but
he did go to the All-Star game in a Dodgers uniform.
It's embarrassing.
Well, and the other thing is if each team has to be represented, right? Or that's the attempt anyway.
What if the Jays had traded Hap on the weekend?
Well, Machado is the Orioles' only All-Star, and Hap is the Jays' only All-Star. Yeah. So then that complicates things. Jeff Samardzija was traded by the Cubs to the A's around the 4th of July in 2014, and he ended up in a neutral uniform at the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
You remember that? Because he was going as a Cub and was going to pitch for the National League, and then he ended up wearing like an American League outfit or something instead of an Oakland thing. I don't know if it's the home run derby or the game itself.
Wouldn't be the game because it would have been
the home run derby.
In the game, you wear your...
Your team,
well, you wear team the jersey. American League or National League jersey.
I noticed how Pooley perked up when I said Jeff Samardzija. It's almost like he went to Notre Dame or something.
Watch him pitch every Friday night, and once a week.
And then play football on Saturdays, right?
He was pretty good. First team All-American.
He played football, too.
Oh, he's a first team All-American football player, wide receiver for Brady Quinn. And then I went to his first, like, he would have been, I mean, a high draft pick in the NFL. He signed with the Cubs. And I remember I was at his first game at Wrigley Field. And he came in the eighth inning, beautiful Friday afternoon, Wrigley Field. And they were on a roll at this point. The Cubs were, those were Jim Henry's days. And I remember watching him walk out to the mound. The crowd was going crazy. And it was the opening day of the Bears training camp. And I thought he could be going over the middle getting hit by Brian Urlacher right now.
Yeah.
Instead, he's running out to the mound. And I think he threw 7 pitches and got a standing ovation. Got like one guy.
That's the George Carlin bit, right? The difference between football and baseball. right? You know, football is played on a gridiron called War Memorial Stadium. Baseball is played in a park, a diamond in a park.
Well, if you think about it, like if you think about it from Samardzija's point of view, more money to be made in baseball if
longevity,
if, longevity,
just the signing
health
bonus
and money,
the signing bonus to begin with.
Well, and he got himself to free agency and he cashed in really, really nicely with the San Francisco Giants. Gord Ash is the former general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, has been a longtime member of the Milwaukee Brewers organization and is currently their VP of baseball projects and is a TSN 1050 contributor, and he joins us now on Overdrive. Gord, how are you?
I'm well, Scotty. Gord, Dave, hello.
Hello, Gord. Hi, Gord.
Is it not fake news that you and Gord Miller are neighbors or been neighbors?
We were backyard neighbors.
Backyard neighbors, a long time ago, the World Series years.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That is.
And I got to tell you, one day a street hockey game broke out, and Gord Miller's pretty darn good.
Not really, but
we were the best player there. That could be it.
I was muscling off.
Because how old were the rest of the kids playing, Gord?
I was lucky eight-year-olds off the tennis ball.
Yeah, you're like,
well, we were all old kids that particular day.
Like the Cosmo Kramer with the karate. Beating up the 7 and 8-year-old kids. Gord, you know, we'll get into the All-Star game here and maybe some Marcus Stroman and Jay Happ stuff in a bit, but it seems like the big, well, it's not news because it hasn't happened yet, but the scuttlebutt around D.C. where the game is being held is that Manny Machado could be on the move here soon, and it seemed like the Dodgers were at the front of this pace maybe 24 hours ago. SI, Sports Illustrated, is suggesting the Phillies maybe the lead dog now. The Brewers have been kicking tires on this. This would be a huge, huge get, yet as it stands right now, it would be a rental, right? Manny Machado is going to cash in something fierce this offseason.
Yeah, he will, and this is what's made this more difficult now, because you can't even get a draft choice for the player that you obtain in for the short term. But you know, he's a difference maker, and it wouldn't surprise me that clubs like the Dodgers and the Phillies have that kind of interest, because they probably have the best chance of retaining him long term. So if you get a player for a couple of months, he gets used to your organization, he likes what he sees, I think that gives you a leg up in terms of negotiating the next contract too.
Gord, I'm working off the assumption you would have been heavily involved in a big decision that the Brewers made 10 years ago when they went and got CC Sabathia in a pure rental role, and man, he was awesome for the Brewers, making starts on 3 days rest all the way down the stretch. The numbers he put up were incredible. What goes into a decision regarding timing, type of player, all of those things, when you know it's going to be a rental and you're willing to cough up to get a player of that quality?
Well, because it was a rental, you know, there are a lot of factors go into this. Brewers hadn't been to postseason since 1982, so obviously there was a lot of pressure from that point of view of trying to make the season count. The deal was early. The deal was in early July, if I remember right, so it was well before the deadline. Obviously, you're securing a top-notch talent. It was great that, you know, we pitched them, as you said, every fourth day, 3 days rest, and CC was all for it. I can tell you his agent wasn't so all for it, but CC was all for it, did a great job for us, and got us into postseason. Unfortunately, lost in the first round to the Phillies. But, you know, these opportunities, this is something I learned from Pat Gillick. I mean, these opportunities come all too infrequently. You think they're going to come more often, but when you have a chance to win, and you have a chance to get to postseason, you have a chance to get to the World Series, you have to do what you have to do. And there was no team that valued their prospects more than the Blue Jays. And to give up the players we gave up to get the trade deadline guys that we got that put us over the hump were tough to do. But we did it because, you know, you have that opportunity all too infrequently.
Gord, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, on the David Price deal, the Jays haven't been hurt that badly with what they gave up. It's not like the prospects they gave up have all blossomed into stars. How often does a team make a trade like this, give up a real good player, and do well?
it's the best deals that everybody always talks about. The best deals are the deals that work well for both sides. But when you're in a playoff situation, a stretch run, it doesn't usually work that way. You know, they're called prospects for a reason because they're no sure things. You know, when we traded David Cone to the Yankees, we got what we thought was a sure thing in Marty Jansen, and obviously that didn't work out. There's a young player for the Blue Jays, Phil Camposano, who was a can't-miss, the next Roberto Clemente. Well, guess what? He missed. So, you know, there's no certainty, and I think going back to the Blue Jays and the David Price deal, those are the kind of deals you have to make to get to where they wanted to go. That was near miss, but, you know, that was pretty darn exciting times around this city. And I think, you know, it really invigorated the fan base and probably still has some residual effect to this day.
And wasn't Ryan Thompson going to be the star when you guys acquired David Cone from the Mets in 92? But it turned out, of course, to be Jeff Kent, who you gave up in that deal. Like, you can just never predict these things.
No, and Jeff Kent was a 26th round pick, if I remember correctly, and no one predicted the kind of career he was. You know, we knew he was going to be a pretty good hitter, but we didn't think he'd be the kind of player that he turned out to be. So, and you're right, Ryan Thompson was the guy that they wanted, the guy that they really wanted desperately. Going back to the Sabathia deal, we traded Michael Brantley, but they really wanted Taylor Green, who, you know, fringe major league player, Canadian kid. But Michael Brantley, obviously, the much better player over time.
There's a reason we still talk about John Smoltz and Doyle Alexander in the late 80s as being that trade deadline deal as well for that many years. But in this year, with the standings the way they are, Gordon, top-end loaded in literally across the board, is there going to be less movement?
No, I still think there's a good point because the races aren't near what they've been in the past. And, you know, some of these are already foregone conclusions. But clubs are getting ready for the postseason. So they want to improve their roster for that. They want to go, obviously, to the World Series. They don't want to play a round or two and then be out. So I think it's important that you still continue to improve your ball club, even if you've got a healthy lead, a wild card lead or a division lead. You still want to improve your roster, and I still think there's going to be meaningful trades here. You know, when you get into August and you start seeing some of those post-waiver deal type situations develop, then it becomes, you know, a little more confusing, and I think we'll see less of those because there'll probably be more claiming on those situations this year than there has been in the past.
With former Blue Jays GM, TSN 1050 contributor Gord Ash on Overdrive. You're listening to TSN 1050.
Gord, I'm curious, you know, May, I think, was the first time in baseball history there were more strikeouts than hits in a month, and they're running pretty much neck and neck. Is that good for baseball? I mean, there was a piece in the Washington Post last week that there's 17 hits in a baseball game now. There were, if it's a three-hour game, that's a hit every 11 minutes.
No, it's not good for the game at all, and I've long been a proponent of going back to the old-time strike zone. If you look at some old games, the strike zone was much larger. Right now you have a mentality in the game that's been around now, kind of a money ball approach that's still part of the game, that base on ball is very important, and there's a lot of patience at the plate. Hitters take a lot of pitches, and the end result is a walk or a strikeout. And you know, I think if the hitters knew there were going to be more strikes called, they would swing more often, put the ball in play more often, the game would be crisper. The whole pace of game issue, I think, would go away because the game's going to flow a lot quicker. And, you know, it is even those of us that love the game from time to time have games that just drag on and drag on and drag on. And I just think it's important that we look at that strike zone. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, in the old days, the umpires would wear the chest protector on the outside. It allowed them to get down in the zone a little more, and there were more strikes called. I don't know what the answer is in that regard, but I do know that the strike zone right now is about the size of a postage stamp, and it's tough for pitchers to compete on that basis.
Well, Questech was the first instrument that was used, and it was put into a number of ballparks and expanded, Gord. The first instrument used to judge an umpire's strike zone. And now on any broadcast, national ESPN or local for any of the 30 teams, you've got the K-box, right? You can see whether that pitch was a ball or a strike, regardless of how it was called. I would have to imagine, and I am the first guy to jump on an umpire, if you go back 30,000 tweets of mine in 5 years, but I'm the first guy to jump on an umpire, but I can imagine it's a difficult job anyway. It's now even harder because you are being judged and judged immediately, pitch in and pitch out.
Yeah, and why there's been some calls for an electronic strike zone. You know, they use this system in the high ranking tennis championships. It's called Hawkeye. It's been used tested in baseball. It's a very reliable system, and it's something that I think they should look at because it is. You know, the pitchers nowadays are throwing with such velocity. A number of them have such movement that it is tough. I mean, and don't forget, and this is sometimes an optical illusion on television, the strike zone is when the ball crosses the plate, not when it's caught by the catcher. And there are catchers now, and that this is one of the analytic stats that talk about the ability for a catcher to steal some strikes, that ability to manage the zone. And there's some guys that are pretty darn good at it.
Gord, is part of this to the cat and mouse game, the response hitters have had to the shift? Because I remember having conversations with Colby Rasmus about this. He'd estimate he'd lose 2 to 3 dozen hits per season just hammering one hop or two hop liners into the shift. The response has been launch angle, exit velocity, get the ball in the air. The shift can't defend the ball in the air. And, oh, if you get the ball in the air and you hit it far enough and hard enough, it's going to go for a home run. The cat-and-mouse game continues here. What do you have any idea what the next move on the chessboard in this cat-and-mouse game might be?
Yeah, I'm afraid they're going to legislate it, which would be a mistake in my opinion. And, you know, the... When shifting really started probably a decade or so ago to Tampa was a big proponent. The Brewers were big proponents. It was clubs that were going back to that Oakland A's model, looking for an edge that didn't cost money, and that was the edge. And you know, I think initially pitchers hated it. Pitchers wanted no part of this. And you still see from time to time when the infielders are shifted to say a left-handed hitter. And the pitcher is throwing the ball on the outside part of the plate, that doesn't make any sense. You want to be throwing the ball to where he's going to hit the ball on the ground in the shift rather than going away from the strength. But, you know, there is so much data now, and you'll be surprised when you look at the data how hitters are such creatures of habit. And I think what hitters need to do, and hopefully the next move by the hitters, is to not be so predictable. I mean, there's nothing wrong with hitting a ball to the left side if it's wide open and getting a single. I mean, there's nothing, you know, the whole object of the deal here is to get men on base so that you can score a run. So I think you might see a little bit more of that. There's been some of it in the past here and there, but you know, it's been kind of a macho thing that, well, I'm going to show you, and just like you talked about, I'll hit the ball over your head. But, you know, I don't think long-term that makes a lot of sense.
The other thing, Gord, that I'm noticing is roster construction and the fact that, you know, the Blue Jays had 11 relievers on the roster not long ago, and that's not uncommon for teams now to carry, you know, 13, 14 pitchers. Is that another major change?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it used to be that 10 was where you wanted to be. Some clubs even went with 9. Oakland went with a 4-man rotation for a while. But it has now become the era of the specialists. You have middle relief specialists. You have hold specialists. You have closers, obviously. And that makes for a lot more difficulty for hitters too, because the arms that are coming in are a lot more fresh than perhaps they used to be, where guys would go multiple innings out of the bullpen. But you know, the other thing they're looking at, Gord, is multi-position players. You want, because you're using more bullpen arms, the last couple of guys on your bench have to be able to play multiple positions, because you're just left short sometimes, and you want to be in a situation where, okay, I can use this guy in the infield, I can use him in the outfield. Catching is obviously a different situation, but every club has an emergency catcher if they need one. But, you know, you're probably going to see right now the 10-day disabled list is getting used as the 26th roster spot. I think you're going to see in the next contract that they'll probably expand the roster to 26.
With Gord Ashe, it's Overdrive on TSN 1050. Gord, you've been in a position where you've had to make these decisions. Has Jay Happ's performances over the last three starts affected his trade value?
A little bit. You know, there are going to be clubs that were not significantly, not meaningfully, but it's probably given them a pause that they maybe want to see one more start. I mean, the thing about it, that they're going to like is he's pitching in the American League East. He's pitching against tough competition majority of the time. He has tremendous poise. He's had a couple of hiccups here, but not terrible. You know, the Boston situation, he should have been out of that inning that got away from him. You know, he's a real professional, and the starting pitching market is very weak. So I think this works to the Blue Jays' benefit too, though, because if you take this more to the wire, there's going to be more interest, more clubs looking at him, just because there's not the kind of starting pitching available that we've had in other years. So if you were interested in Jay Happ in June, you're still interested in him. You've not turned away from that.
Thanks for your time, Gord. And next time a random ball hockey game breaks out, invite Pooley and me.
Okay, great.
Pooley will block shots. Thanks,
I like my odds.
Yeah, you do. Gord Ashe is a former GM of the Blue Jays, current Brewers VP of Baseball Projects, TSN 1050 contributor. We always appreciate his insight. So this game is going down tonight by the looks of it.
Looks like it's
going to
happen.
Miraculous,
yeah.
Weather clearing in Washington.
So while we were talking, the Jays trade with Detroit for David Price, Daniel Norris, Matt Boyd, Jairo Laporte.
Right.
And Laporte, Norris was the big one.
Laporte's out of baseball. Well, he's in the minors for Chicago.
Somewhere.
Got released. Boyd is playing for the Tigers.
And had a very good start to the year, but meh.
Yeah.
Mid-rotation at best, probably.
And Norris is what?
But Gord, you can...
He had some serious health issues, correct? Norris did.
Serious? I don't know.
He had some health issues.
I mean, there have been some nicks here and there. I don't know how serious. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to expand on your thought, because I know where you're going with this. If you go back to the Marlins deal, all right? So, yeah. Okay.
You're talking about the
2012.
The Giancarlo deal? Or?
No. The deal Alex Anthopoulos made. Because, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your point was going to be, what are the guys that Alex Anthopoulos gave up for David Price doing right now?
Yeah.
If you go back to the Marlins deal, which was then followed with the R.A. Dickey deal.
Yeah.
We have to count that one because Noah Syndergaard's pretty good.
I know the catcher.
But if you fast forward to the Josh Donaldson deal and the 2015 deals for Tulowitzki and for Price, Noah Syndergaard, yes, that is regrettable.
Yep.
Beyond that, because you've heard a lot of squawking about how the herd got thinned in the minor league system, and how many of those guys have gone on to be good to great major league ball players. Syndergaard.
Yeah, and to be honest,
that's it.
When I think about it, you'd have to really look at it. How many times when these guys are dealt does the player turn out to be, do the players involved turn out to be superstars? Like you gave up, you gave up a prospect.
Right. Turned out to be, well, that's why I referenced John Smoltz. That was 1987. Yeah,
I'm sure it's happened.
It worked for both teams.
And the example I give is, and it relates to hockey, is you always hear when a soon-to-be free agent gets traded, it's going to be and, right? You got to have a first-round pick, and. The best trade I remember being made...
One for one.
Joe Nieuwendyk was sitting out in Calgary, mm-hmm. Couldn't get a contract done. Al Coates was the GM of the Flames. He traded him to Dallas for Jerome Ginla. Straight up.
I remember that.
And Dallas got what they wanted. They won the cup. He won the Conn Smythe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was great for them, and Calgary got franchise player. Like, I don't need five pieces. Like, if I'm the Ottawa Senators and I'm talking to Tampa about Erik Karlsson,
quality.
Give me Braden Point.
Would you want Sergachev in that deal too?
Well, you're going to get multiple pieces, Gord, but you need multiple pieces to have a chance to be special.
I don't want five pieces.
No, I agree.
I want one. Give me one really good piece, one bona fide piece, and then I'll take a first or whatever. But
and a prospect.
But give me Point. Give me Braden Point.
You know who doesn't want to hear about that? Braden Point.
Right. No, he doesn't. But you see my point. And I'd like to look. I'd like to go back at all these deals in baseball. The number of guys that got traded right around the non waiver deadline, and see how many teams that traded a star player actually did okay. Yeah. I mean, you're going to lose the player for nothing. I get that the player walks for nothing.
I mean, I use the 1992 example, which actually wasn't deadline. It was into the waiver period when the Jays got David Cone in 1992. It was into August. Jeff Kent became a star, but he really became a star with the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah.
He wasn't even a Met anymore. I think he was okay. He was pretty good for the Mets. Became a star playing with... They hated each other, but he became a star playing with Barry Bonds in San Francisco.
Well, it doesn't matter if you hate each other. It's baseball, man.
Yeah.
It's baseball.
A lot of people
We've been in the locker room a lot today. We have a lot of locker room talk.
We have pulled that curtain back. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. It's Scott MacArthur, Gord Miller, Dave Poulin. It's Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Dave Poulin, just because I got the side eyes from Dave this time, and Gord Miller.
You should be way more scared of Dave Poulin than you are of me.
You're further away.
Dave didn't get those scars shaving.
We talked about that yesterday, the jaw story.
Dave, there wasn't a lot left to Dave when he walked away from the game for a while. Took a while to put him back together.
Put yourself back together.
But I'm back.
He's back.
I'm back, baby!
I'm stuck on this Raptor deal.
Kawhi?
Yeah.
Because it's not what they've done. That's why you're stuck on it.
Yeah.
It's not what they've done.
Are you adverse to change, Gord?
I'm not averse to change. I'm all in favor of change. I'm all in favor of, making a bold move. I think
Masai's been very methodical.
Yeah. I think you're right, Dave. That's what it is. This is so out of character for them.
Okay, so let me throw this at you, because again, we understand that there are no guarantees. Kawhi's got 1 year left on his deal. We know that it was a very, to put it mildly, weird season with San Antonio. If Zach Lowe and what he's saying on his podcast is correct, and these guys are plugged in, that it's DeMar, Pascal Siakam, and a first, do you feel better about a trade like that, given that OG Anunoby is not involved?
No.
Because OG's kind of the guy I think they're highest on among
right,
that young
but,
group.
Right, but who becomes... To me, the strength of the Raptors is Lowry and DeRozan.
Okay, so it's a 59-win strength with repeated playoff. Are you in the crowd then that says it's LeBron and nothing else that is the issue with this basketball team in the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, I think you win 59 games. Now, and I've heard all this stuff about the Raptors blowing it up, and I get why you'd want to do that and the frustration, but if you are going to blow this thing up, man, it's just, as an outsider, it just seems like such a reach. It just seems like you're reaching for a player who might not be healthy, who would only be here a year. It just smells of desperation to me.
Particularly if you're giving up DeRozan in the deal, because Boston and Philly are both going to be pretty good.
I mean, I don't know.
It's not like the East is going to be a cakewalk.
I don't know how safe it is to allow business to creep into your, in this case, basketball decisions. The Leafs are the foolproof team in this city. They could go through the rebuild. Now, they had to hit on the lottery ball to get Auston Matthews. I understand all that. But they're still going to pack the place. They're going to still have eyeballs watching them on TV. The Raptors, the Blue Jays, you go on down the list, guys. If you go into a full-on rebuild, I mean, we're witnessing something of some descript with the Blue Jays this year. You go into a full-on rebuild if you're the Toronto Raptors, and you are the team that plays in the same season as the Maple Leafs, outside of your diehards, you're not going to have a lot of attention paid to you. And I do think there is some value in having attention paid to you.
The Raptors sold out. The Raptors played to 100% capacity last year. So it's not like they need to juice attendance. I mean, I just... To me, if you're going to move DeMar DeRozan, it's got to be for...
Is the team going to be good enough if you do move DeMar and bring Kawhi Leonard in? Is the team going to be good enough to take the next step?
Yeah, I just been, you know,
they're going to be different.
Hearing Scott do the update, I just keep thinking about this, and it just, to me, I have a soft spot for the Raptors. I've always liked them. You know, I worked a lot of their games back in the day, and I've always felt like they were the poor cousin of the Leafs, and I got all that. But man, they just seem to have found a place in this market, and those two guys have found a place in this market. And it's not like they're playing bad. They got swept by Cleveland. Okay. You know, they should have won game one. They didn't.
They were in game three.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, game three was.
The way game one ended was disappointing. The response on home court in game two was, I think, kind of a red flag. The other thing is, and I'm not saying this is what Masai and Bobby Webster are thinking, but optically, from the neophyte looking from the outside in, Indiana took Cleveland in the first round to 7 games, right, and they were life and death. And it was a homer series in the Eastern Final between the Cavs and a Boston team with some very good young players, but who were still without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. And Cleveland, it was a homer series for 6 games. Then they went on the road, and they beat Boston in Game 7. It was a close series. It was a hard-fought series. And sandwiched in between was a whitewashing.
Yep, and I totally get you. Here's the concern I have. And Dave, this is a bit in your wheelhouse, Pooley, is that the Leafs lose to the Bruins in that Game 7 collapse, right? In 2013. So the feeling was, as I understand at the time, that they felt like in that series they got pushed around, needed some toughness, needed some grit. That leads to David Clarkson.
And David Boland.
I think the mistake is to lose a playoff series and try to make adjustments because you lost that series. If you're losing series repeatedly, like over and over again, and the Raptors have, but for different reasons, right?
But the question is what does Masai and Bobby believe about this roster if a significant change is not made? With LeBron out of the conference, are we, and this is me talking as them, are we good enough to go to the NBA final?
So that team last year played 82 games and won 59 of them. With no significant changes and younger guys getting better, why couldn't they?
Because some of the pieces that got better, like a Freddie Van Vliet, I mean,
right,
got better. Is he going to be that much better this
year? But to your point,
Believe Nick Nurse and his scheme and his in-game adjustments will be enough of a difference?
And on the business side, to your point, trying to sell the same program might be very difficult.
And it would only be the second year of their revamped offense. Because that was a pretty drastic change last year with the ball movement and everything they did under Casey. And this would be a step further with that.
From an optics...
Gord, I'm with you on this. I don't get the move.
But from an optics perspective... And I know how you feel about this, Gord, because we did some Leafs Lunch episodes together in June. When you look at that Maple Leafs roster right now, you can believe and not be committed for believing so that the Leafs could be in the Stanley Cup final next June.
Absolutely.
They're not the best team in the Eastern Conference on paper going into the season. I'll grant you that if that's the argument you want to make, but there's a chance. The thing with the NBA, and then if you get to the Stanley Cup final, you've obviously got a shot in a 7-game series of winning the cup. That's a pretty obvious comment to make. The thing with the NBA, and I don't know if it's that the goalposts move now because the goalposts were LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
There's goalposts in basketball?
Absolutely. If you haven't seen them, look harder. The goalposts were LeBron and the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
The goalposts now, at best, I would think, would be the NBA Finals. Because the problem with the league is that, everybody just says, well, you could represent the East, but you're going to get waxed by Golden State once you get to the NBA Finals. There's value in that, all the home dates, the excitement through the spring.
I'll take my chances on that.
But we're all just waiting for the inevitable brick wall.
See,
before it was LeBron and the Cavs, now it might be, well, okay, we might win three playoff rounds, but we're going to get our asses
but
handed
to
us.
But the tweak is interesting, like the tweak in basketball, if they're that close. And to your point about both Clarkson and Boland, what you're envisioning at that point is, who could we have put out in the last 6 minutes of a game that would have changed the outcome of that game? The problem was, when David Clarkson came here, we had him rated always as a third-line player.
Right.
By paying him what we did, he didn't think he was a third-line player anymore.
Right.
And then got off to such a terrible start. David Boland was fine until he got hurt in Vancouver and the Achilles cut. And the team was actually doing very well. If you look at early December and what the record was through that time. But when you pay a player, he thinks he's got to be different in order to merit that. But all we were thinking at that point was, who could you put out in that last stretch of 6 or 7 minutes that would have changed the outcome of that game?
So here's a question. I think, to your point, Scott, in the NBA, it's much more predictable. It tends to be more predictable. In hockey, what was the last Eastern Conference first seed to go to the Stanley Cup Final?
Off the top of my head,
Tampa, 2004.
Okay.
The last time the team that finished first in the Eastern Conference in the regular season got to the final. It is so topsy-turvy. It is so unpredictable.
Well, we've had
But I'm with you. The Leafs are in that conversation. For sure they're in
there. There is something about home court and basketball.
There is.
And baseball, home field.
And how many real upsets?
Hockey, home ice.
How many
it's not
real
as big
upset?
A deal.
Like, was Cleveland over Toronto in the basketball, in the NBA playoffs, an upset?
No, but the way it happened,
James is not
it was an angering, not an upset,
right,
the way it happened.
And getting swept is, and I've felt this for a long time, and I remember plain as day, the Florida Panthers in 2000 getting swept by New Jersey. And the Devils went on to win the Cup that year. But that devastated the Panthers. Getting swept, mm-hmm. I think they felt they'd have been better off missing the playoffs. Being swept in a playoff series is a crushing, crushing defeat that makes you question everything you do. And that's why I think you got to step back and say, we got to take the long view here. Like, you can't. This just seems like a reach to me. It's too much of a reach for me.
No, well, it's just there's so many questions. And what you would have to hope, if you're somebody who's prone to trust front offices, is that Masai and Bobby would have done the work on Kawhi Leonard
and
with no promises for next summer
and by
his
the way,
free agency. But.
And you're trading a guy who scores, DeMar DeRozan, for a guy who doesn't.
Well, that's I don't really think you're changing your team. But that's what you're doing. You're taking away offense for defense.
You know, Nick Nurse has said about DeMar, I mean, if he's here, we're gonna make him a better defender. We're going to have him defend some of the top offensive players in the game when he's lined up on them. They're not going to shy away from that. That was something Nick Nurse said that is an adjustment he plans to make. Terrell Owens has opened up...
What?
Yeah, what?
What?
What? That's the hook, Gordon Miller. What?
Gordon Miller is making a comeback as well.
I went away?
He's here all
you're going to play.
You're going to play? No, you know what? Hockey's been great to me since I stopped trying to play it well.
Hockey's been very, very good to you. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur. Somebody jump in.
Two guys.
It's our last intro. It's our last intro, and I...
Scott MacArthur and two guys.
I don't want somebody getting Pooley, mad at me on the way
Pooley,
out the
you
door.
You go ahead. Pooley, go ahead.
There, it's Pooley's last day on the show this week, so it'll be Gordon I the rest of the week.
And it's Gordon's first day this week, Pooley. Although he's working every day this week.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, here we go.
But Tuesday was here the first day.
All right, we got like 3 minutes, so let's knock out a couple of quick topics.
With Gordon Owens, Miller and Dave Poulin.
Yes, there you go. Terrell Owens, 44 years old, 10-day
negotiating window
with Edmonton.
No, don't be a circus. You know what? If you're the CFL, don't let yourself be a circus.
Manziel's a totally different situation.
Yeah, no.
Well, it's the age thing, right? And the fact the guy hasn't played in...
Eight years.
Is it 8 years? I would have said six or seven, but it is that long.
2010 was a full-time player.
Yeah. So, wow. No.
So
please
no.
Don't. Please don't.
No.
Well, and the market out there in Edmonton doesn't... need.
No.
They got pretty good receivers, actually, too.
And Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, State of the Union address, blah, 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 All-Star game, always gets asked about possible expansion locations. Quote, we have a real list of cities that I think are not only interested in having baseball, but are viable in terms of baseball. Places like Portland, Oregon, Las Vegas, Charlotte, North Carolina, Nashville, and that's just in the United States, certainly in Canada, Montreal, maybe Vancouver. We think there are places in Mexico we could go over the long haul, end quote. Montreal, Gord, Montreal.
I just hate to see them get dragged down this road.
Keep dangling the carrot.
Yeah, just keep dangling it. Look, if the city of Montreal wants to spend $500 million to build a new baseball stadium, go right ahead. But fix that damn road in from the airport first, because that's been 10 years. That highway construction project...
it's unbelievable.
It's been 10 years.
As bad as traffic is in Toronto, the construction in Montreal is staggering.
It's like the Davis Cup. It never started, and
there
it never ends.
There are ramps that just end in the air.
Like, yeah.
In the air. Like, it's unbelievable. I know, you don't travel outside of...
I've been to Montreal many times. I've been to Ontario and Quebec.
Well done.
I'm a cultured Canadian. Well done, I just want you to know that.
You know, we have a few more provinces now. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, well, we have one more territory than we did 20 years ago.
But what does it matter to you? Hey, listen, you know what? I appreciate the efforts of people in Montreal. I just don't see it. I think they go in South.
A very small nostalgic group, is it not?
I think they'd go to Mexico before they come to Canada.
Hmm. What if the president of the United States gets his wall, Gord? Oh, that's another topic for another day.
Knock the ball over it.
just knock the ball. All right, boys, this was great. Gord, we'll be back at it tomorrow.
Can't wait.
Pooley, enjoy wherever it is you're going.
Off I go.
Off you go. And this has been Overdrive as I drag it 5 seconds to get to the top of the hour.
Where's your picks?
There's no games. TSN 1050.